702. News and current affairs.
My guest is Jenny Irish Koboshiani, researcher at Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. Jenny, thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. Some scary stuff coming out of your report. Hello, Jenny. Jenny Irish Koboshiani, are you there? It looks like we are having some connectivity issues. Do you want to perhaps reconnect with Jenny and let's see if we... Is she there? Jenny, good evening to you. Are you there? No, it looks like we're not connecting with Jenny. How do you want to proceed? Is she there? I mean, can you see that she's connected? Yeah, okay. So she's probably just trying to reconnect. Anyway, Jenny Irish Koboshiani is my guest, researcher at the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. And they've put together a pretty extensive report on how international, shall we say, international networks, criminal networks have seemingly infiltrated more than 15 sectors in South Africa. And you and I have been having these conversations, and I'm hoping that my conversation with Jenny is going to give us a sense of how extensive this infiltration is. How do we experience it in South Africa? And she joins me now on the telephone line, Jenny Irish Koboshiani. Good evening to you, Jenny. Thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate your time.
Pleasure, and evening to you and your listeners.
216 pages of a report that suggests that 15 sectors in the South African economy have been infiltrated by sophisticated criminal networks. What does this mean to the layman's ear?
I think it's not necessarily sectors, but I think we're looking at 15 different illicit markets where organized crime has become quite embedded.
We were having a conversation last week about the construction industry and the fact that there's now a thing called the construction mafia. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, I think that would fall under the category of extortion. And so the construction, one such kind of organized groupings, I think that if you look at the illicit markets that we're dealing with a range of different illicit markets. So it would include your illicit drug trafficking, your illicit firearm sales, your trading in your human trafficking, etc. That would be one kind of market. And then we're also looking at markets that violently use violence. So that would be your robberies, your extortion, your kidnapping for ransom. We've also looked at infrastructure, at organized crime that target infrastructure. And there you're looking at some of the stuff that we've seen come up in the state capture, as well as your illicit mining, your copper theft, etc., as well as white collar crime and some of those types of crimes.
Is this new? I mean, some people may argue that, you know, I mean, what's the big deal? We've always had crime in South Africa, you know. You're making it sound like this is somehow novel. Is this novel? Should we be worried more than we've ever been about crime in this country? What is the story here?
I think that what we are saying in the report is that basically we are seeing a growth in organized crime in the country, and that is something that we need to start dealing with quite seriously, and that South Africa itself is becoming. That it is quite serious and that we are at a tipping point and we need to take steps to begin to deal with this.
What about these new developments, this sort of entrenchment of organized crime in South Africa is different from anything we've experienced before? Why is this so alarming now?
So I think it's been growing over a period of time. But I think what we've seen since about 2011, 2012 is quite a significant increase in violent crimes in the country, and a significant amount of those crimes are linked to organized crime.
So you spoke, for example, about the kidnapping, the growth of the kidnapping business. And over the last, let's say, 24 months, we've seen more and more and more bolder forms of kidnappings for ransom, right? where is that coming from? Why does it seem to have proliferated so strongly over such a short period of time?
So I think that if you look at the kind of statistics around kidnapping for ransom, we start to see kind of an increase again from 2010, 2011. It starts gradually increasing over a couple of years. And then since 2018, 19, we've seen quite a significant increase, with the biggest increases coming in 2020 and 2021. And I think that would be one example of how organized crime is becoming more entrenched and escalating within the country. And I think you're looking at different types of kidnappings that are taking place in the country. You've got some really highly sophisticated transnational groupings that are involved in kidnapping for ransom, really well-planned, sophisticated kidnappings, and then you've got some copycat-type kidnappings taking place with more localized networks actually seeing that this is something that they can get involved in.
Somebody said to me, well, Aubrey, you know, sure, the concern is warranted, but, you know, this is the result of entering the global space. South Africa has been insulated for as long as possible. And what's happening now is that you, as South Africans, are beginning to feel the reality of being part of the global community. Would you agree?
I think there's definitely an aspect to that. I think there's absolutely no doubt that some of the transnational groupings that are operating that have targeted South Africa, that is part of what's happening globally. But I think that if you look at South Africa's organized crime landscape, we have one of the most, what kind of distinguishes us from many other countries is that we probably have one of the most diverse range of illicit markets that organized crime is involved in. And so unlike some of the other countries where you see organized crime targeting a couple of illicit markets, in South Africa we have an extremely diverse range of markets being utilized by organized crime.
Is it because we have a less than efficient crime fighting sort of capability and capacity in South Africa, or is this something that is to be expected for an economy with the various levels of sophistication that we have, plus, I suppose, some of the disparities, the economic disparities that characterize our economy? Is this to be expected by the South African market?
I think it's all three. I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of it being all three of those factors. I think on the one hand, we actually have quite a significant infrastructure. We obviously tied into global economies, et cetera, which makes it attractive for organized crime groups to operate in. I think we do have huge disparities in the country, and that also makes us, it makes recruitment into groupings like organized crime groupings quite easy. And I think it's a criminal justice system. And then I think it's also certain peculiarities to South Africa that exist. So for example, in some areas where we have a mass public transport system that is self-regulated, etc., we do see things like what's often been referred to as a taxi mafia developing in that context.
Some, though, would argue that the taxi mafia has been around for a very, very long time, maybe getting a little bit bolder, maybe diversifying its business interests a little bit more. Maybe that's the reason why it's starting to attract the attention of people such as yourself. But some people argue that the taxi mafia, in fact, the taxi industry has been run along mafia lines since its inception, some may argue. What is it about the taxi industry that is creating for yourselves a little bit of concern, if not a lot of concern?
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. It's been around for a long time, but I think the levels of violence that are taking place in the taxi industry is been growing over a period of time. I think one of the things that need to be understood is that this report isn't saying that suddenly we've had this explosion organized crime. It's been a gradual explosion, and we all experience it, and most South Africans have experienced it over a period of time. I think what we've tried to do in this report is to say, look, we need to begin to, if we're going to deal with this and the fact that it is constantly growing year on year, we need to actually understand what we're dealing with. And we need to look at what strategies have we adopted and what strategies do we need to adopt going forward in terms of dealing with this. So if you look at the taxi industry itself, I think one of the concerns for us is that the kind of criminality in the taxi industry is actually beginning to impact on other areas. So for example, your Izinkabi, which are now no longer just operating in the taxi industry, but are now kind of hitmen that you can hire out for other activities and other criminal groupings making use of Izinkabi. So that would be the difference to like where the taxi industry was maybe 15, 20 years ago.
So if you don't know what Izinkabi is, it is, I suppose, the colloquial term that's used for assassins that used to be associated largely with the taxi industry, although we saw them being used in various political skirmishes that we've got in the country. And you're suggesting, Jenny, that they are diversifying this service to other areas of criminality. So it's no longer just in the taxi industry, they are entering other spaces, and this is becoming a business.
That's exactly what our information is indicating.
And where do you see them emerge, the Izinkabi situation?
So you've mentioned in the political arena, and with whistleblowers, etc. It's become a business in itself. So they have been linked to some of the assassinations in the Western Cape. Some assassinations linked to the drug trade. They obviously have been used in interpersonal stuff. So it's pretty wide ranging. If you have access to criminal networks and know where to source them, you can source them. But they are no longer just operating in the taxi industry. They're actually selling their services outside of the taxi industry.
And are we seeing a lot more of this cross-pollination of, how should we say, the cross-pollination of skills, as it were, in the criminal sort of space? So are we seeing, for example, connections, for example, with the Zamazamas and people in the one of the things that I found very, very remarkable, Jenny, was the growth, particularly in the townships, of the jewelry smelting businesses, something that never was there, and now it's there. I come from Mamelodi, and as you enter Mamelodi, there'll be 4, 5, 6, maybe 10 containers of these invitations to people to bring their gold, their silver, to be smelted for a certain amount of time. And then my mind goes into this whole issue of the stealing of cables, for example, and that business growing. Is there perhaps a connection with these things?
I think one of the things that the report looks at is that there is connections between different markets, and that some of the criminal ecosystems that exist around markets are also kind of, they don't stick to one particular market, but they begin to impact on other markets and get involved in other markets. So a classic example would be in your illicit drug trade, where people in that drug trade have actually got involved in the taxi industry, and that would be another example where people involved in the drug trade have also got involved in some of the copper theft stuff, and where people involved in the drug trade are also now becoming middlemen, arms dealers in some instances.
How did you guys, as the Global Initiative Against Transactional Organized Crime, get to have such deep interest in this? Were you commissioned specifically? How did that happen?
I think that we're a global think tank on organized crime, and we have people operate in a number of different countries, and we have a global crime index which we produce on an annual basis. And within that, we were starting to see South Africa creep up in terms of its standing with regard to organized crime. And I think that's what kind of prompted us to then start looking at this. And it was really our objective was to understand the growth and impact of illicit markets in South Africa, to understand the harm of these illicit markets, to understand how the criminal ecosystems around the markets interact, and then to stimulate debate about what kind of new set of responses we need to be developing. And so we've been engaging prior to the release of the report and post the release of the report with a number of significant players in South Africa to say, how do we take this work forward and how do we begin to look at what needs to be done to deal with this?
The criminal world has been, you know, the international global criminal world has unfortunately been glamorized and romanticized through movies and so forth. And we tend to sometimes make the mistake of thinking that it ends there in some movie. You know, we look at the mafia, we look at the Yakuza, we look at the triads, we look at the various organizations, the Black Axe here on the African continent and so forth. And there is an intrigue. But these are real criminal organizations that are ruthless, right? I mean, these aren't people that are here to come and play the Don and of the Mafia and Godfather Part 8 or whatever the case. This is real crime.
This is real crime. And I think one of the things that we have tried to do in the report is to look at what are the harms of all of these criminal ecosystems. So within each different market, what are the harms that is creating for people living in the country and for the country as a whole? And so I think that the impact is very real. But I must say at this point that while South Africa has been creeping up and is currently, I mean, according to our global index, it's rated like 19th in the world, we need to also understand that South Africa also has, it's not all a doom and gloom story. And I think that sometimes it does get sensationalized and even the report itself gets sensationalized. I think that we're saying that there are steps that can be taken. We are at a tipping point. We do need to look at our responses. We do need to look at where we're going with regard to this. But we also rank quite high on a positive note with regard to our ability to develop. We also look at resilience to organized crime when we do our assessment of how organized crime is looking in the different countries. And when it comes to resilience factors, South Africa rates above the global average in terms of its resilience. And that would include things like a strong civil society, a free press, legislation being in place to actually begin to deal with this. So I think we do have the ability to deal with this. And I think it isn't something which we should get all doom and gloom about. I think it's an issue we need to deal with. And we have the ability to deal with that. But we just need to look at whether our approaches at the moment are the way we want to be going and what approaches do we think could be more effective in dealing with this.
There are some challenges in the immigration debate in South Africa, some serious challenges. Sometimes things get out of hand in that conversation, right? And it becomes polarized and it becomes very, very unpleasant in that conversation. To what extent are some of the immigration issues that we have in this country contributory to the rise in transnational, international criminality in South Africa? We've heard, for example, of the cigarette, the illicit cigarette business in South Africa that's all but crippled the legitimate cigarette industry in South Africa. We are hearing more and more of the human trafficking business. You might have heard, as when I started this conversation, about stories that have been reported. In fact, I've hosted reporters that have suggested that there is evidence suggesting that some of the spaza shops in the townships have now been identified as sources for the financing of terrorist groups. First of all, how real is this? How true is it? And to what extent is the immigration debate in South Africa contributory to all of these issues that we're talking about this evening?
Look, I think there are certain illicit markets where you are, and I mean, we spoke earlier about the kidnapping for ransom, where you have transnational organized crime groupings being involved. But I think we need to also point out at this point, before everybody starts to get like hot under the collar about that, that many of those transnational groups that operate cannot operate without local South Africans working with those groupings. And that on their own, they're not always able to penetrate illicit markets effectively unless yeah. they have some links with local South Africans who are also embedded sure. in those markets.
Sure. No, it's absolutely naive to think that people can simply come and just do things in the borders of one country without the assistance of the people of that country at one level or the other. I mean, that is completely naive to think that way. But we do sometimes have those moments of naivety. Is there truth from your studies, Jenny, about the possibility that there is some activity pointing to terror sponsorship by our spaza shops?
Look, I mean, that wasn't necessarily one of the areas that we looked at in terms of this study. There have been some indications, but I think sometimes it also gets a little bit blown out of proportion in terms of there are some indications that it may be happening at some levels, but I think it also can be over-dramatized and sometimes gets a bit blown out of proportion.
And what would that mean? What does blowing out of proportion mean? I mean,
that we start to see every kind of foreign-owned spaza shop as being linked into these kinds of activities, etc. I think that there are very few countries in the world which are not experiencing those kinds of operations at some level or another. But I think that we need to look at where it's happening realistically and where it becomes a massive conspiracy around it happening.
We've heard in the past of well-known mafiosos in this country that have had connections with police officers. At some point, a national commissioner was connected to some of them, and so forth. Do we have those kinds of criminal connections? I mean, are we talking here about the Cosa Nostra, for example, connected to a police senior individual? We've seen how very, very senior police officers were arrested last week, and there's suggestions that there is deep organized crime, even of a multinational nature. Is that what we're talking about here? Or is it just people who've become more sophisticated within our borders, but not necessarily transnational, international types of crimes?
Yeah, I mean, we do have some very sophisticated local organized crime groupings, and corruption is as important to them as it is for transnational groupings. But I think when we look at corruption by organized crime, be it a kind of very much localized network, or whether it's a transnational network, we need to understand that those networks operate for profit. And you're talking about vast amounts of money. So if you look at the drug trade, for example, it's massive amounts of money that you are the illicit drug trade that exists within the illicit drug trade. So the one thing would be your corruption and embedding organized crime, embedding itself with key senior officials within the criminal justice system. But I think what we're also seeing is that because there are vast amounts of money involved in some of these illicit markets, that they're also able to corrupt lower levels, frontline policing areas. So it's not just your kind of senior officials that we'd be talking about, but you have places in the country where there's feelings that the entire frontline policing is actually becoming susceptible to the kind of corruption because of the money that is involved in the illicit markets.
I mean, the whole Zondo Commission has been a trip down that kind of space where we've got deep corruption, we've got illicit networks of companies and organizations aiding and abetting what we could call state capture and so forth. And we haven't really gotten that under the knee yet. I mean, we're still talking about it and we're still waiting for action to be taken, and maybe there is some action being taken. But one does get the sense sometimes, Jenny, that we don't have the sophistication, the capacity to deal with this. Do we?
I think we've got the ability. I really think that we have the ability to deal with it. I think we just need to look at some of the problems around some of our responses to date. And I think that for us, some of our responses have been too stovepiped. We've been too reactive in terms of how and kind of a fire force response. It's been really random and dispersed, and that we don't always have a strategic and future orientated approach to dealing with how to deal with these matters. But I think it's also one of the things that we're also raising in the report is that, you know, you're talking about organized crime having quite an extensive foothold in South Africa. I think what also is concerning about the Syaston situation is that in South Africa, organized crime is particularly violent. A lot of our organized crime is particularly violent, and that is obviously of concern. But given the extent of organized crime, I think we need to recognize that we can't just deal with it from a criminal justice sector. Response. We need to deal with it as a society and as a government as a whole, and that includes the public and the private sector looking at how they're addressing organized crime. I think we also need to look at better regulatory communication, enforcement, development responses that are working in a more synchronized way. And then I think we also need to look at drawing in civil society to this. I mean, we need to start being able to say, how do we stop young people who are often from disadvantaged areas from being drawn into networks that are operating in terms of organized crime. So I think that we can look at just a criminal justice response, and there's definitely a need to improve our criminal justice response to organized crime.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're going to just arrest our way out of this problem. We need to look at much more comprehensive strategies to begin to deal with this, which involve both the government, but it also involves civil society and the private sector.
You speak of the remarkable violence of the crime in our country, and I digress a little bit, but just to get a little bit of insight, could it be because it's still at the stages where it's being entrenched? So you know, in order to institutionalize it, so like some of the other countries perhaps that have really institutionalized crime, it's part of the DNA of those societies, that perhaps it started out that way, that it was particularly violent, so that it didn't have any, people are made to understand that these are the very swift consequences of standing against this, and that's why ours is so thoroughly violent, that it's part of the process of entrenching it?
I think that would definitely be the case with the emergence of certain new markets. So when you look at, for example, the extortion market, and I'm not just talking here about the construction mafia, even if you look at the extortion that's happening in areas like Khayelitsha and some of the local areas, violence is something that is critically important in the emergence of those extortion groups. Once those extortion groups start to get a foothold, you often see the violence start to come down because people know, listen, if I don't cooperate with these people, violence is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So the threat of violence becomes sufficient to deal with it. But I think that, that so that is one aspect of it, definitely. But I think also we are a society which has a significant amount of illicit firearms in circulation. And that is becoming very interlinked with criminal markets. So if you look at the drug trade, for example, you've got a huge amount of money that's being made in the drug trade, which can then be used to finance illicit firearms. Those illicit firearms can then be used to control greater drug turf and thereby greater profit, and that greater profit then gets, some of that greater profit then gets put back into purchasing firearms. So it becomes a little bit of a vicious circle. And then we also have certain types of organized crime that is quite rampant in South Africa, and that would be some of your kind of armed robbery crimes that are organized. So some of your business robberies, your CIT heists, which have been around for a while and continue to rely on violence. And then we've got certain types of groupings, like, for example, your mafias operating in the mass transport sector, actually also rely very heavily on violence to actually ensure compliance and ensure control and access to and control over certain aspects of that trade. And with the availability of illicit firearms, that violence becomes obviously escalated into firearm violence.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, give us a call if you want to be part of this conversation. Jenny Irish Kobosiane is my guest. She is a senior researcher at Global Initiative Against Transactional Organized Crime. We're talking about crime in South Africa. It's escalation, but more importantly, organized crime. Yeah, sophisticated organized crime, resourced organized crime. What are your experiences? What are you seeing? What are your insights? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. We're going to be tapering down now to what the solutions are. But before we even go there, Jenny, I want to talk a little bit about your thoughts and your research and what it tells you about the Zamazama phenomenon, right? Highly armed. I mean, in many cases, they outgun the police. Yeah, we've seen how they've grown, how they've proliferated, how they've become bolder. There are settlements, there are villages that are now known Zamazama villages. To what extent is that not a problem of the arresting process? You know, the criminal justice process not getting involved as soon as they should have. I mean, this is a conversation we've been having for the last 15 years, right?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a couple of factors.
Yep.
I think that there are certain types of crimes where if you don't, and in fact, it would probably apply to almost all organized crime, if you actually don't actually deal with them as they are emerging, they become that much more difficult to deal with as they become more entrenched but I think also, I mean, I referred earlier to access to firearms and the fact that very often some of these organized crime groups have significant access to firearms and often very high caliber firearms, which makes it even more difficult to police given the access to that kind of those kinds of firearms. So I think that part of it is we need to have early warning systems as markets are beginning to emerge and be able to deal with those markets as they emerge. And the Zamazamas are one. I think the extortion markets are another where that becomes critically important. But I think also as part of dealing with organized crime, we need to start dealing with reducing access to the illicit firearm market in this country, because that poses a very serious threat when it comes to organized crime.
Many people have said that illicit firearm source is the police and the army themselves. And I'm sure you've come across these narratives, but that the police and the army, because many of their personnel are so underpaid, you know, find this to be a great way to augment their incomes, and that most of the firearms that we hear about, used in these types of crimes come from the police themselves and the army.
I think our research would indicate that there are a couple of different sources of that flow into the illicit firearm market. So I think that we do have some cross-border weapons coming across the borders. I think we've started to see that was a serious problem in the past. It is still happening, but the numbers are probably declining in terms of how much firearms are coming across the borders. We do have a very heavily armed civilian public, and obviously there are firearms that are lost or during the commission of a crime get stolen, and those obviously a significant number of those land up in the illicit markets. And then there's firearms from the police and army, and I mean we have done quite extensive research and are very concerned about firearms that go missing from the police and the army. And it's not just police issue firearms, but it would also include firearms under the jurisdiction of the police, which includes things like firearms handed in during amnesty processes, as well as firearms that are seized and then make their way back into the illicit economies. But I think it's not just the police and army we're talking about here. If one looks at the at where firearms are within government, I think one of the things that our report on silencing, how to silence the gun, looks at is the fact that in South Africa, which is something which I'm not sure how much the public is aware of, but there are more firearms in other state departments and entities than there are in the police and army together. And those entities seldom account. Now, I'm not saying that accountability within the police and army is great, but other government departments don't even report on the loss of firearms. So if you scan through reports, annual reports of different government departments, they won't tell you how many firearms they possess and how many firearms have been lost and stolen in those government departments and government entities. And very few of them are able to say what happens to their firearms. So I think, yes, we do need to look at the police and army, and there is a problem. There is a very serious problem with firearms landing up in criminal hands from police and army sources. But I think we need to look beyond just the police and army and look at government departments as a whole. I think the Zondo Commission highlighted what happened with some of the state intelligence firearms. But it goes beyond that. Corrections, the different metro police departments, etc. We need to seriously look at controlling government firearms as well as civilian firearms, and not just focus on civilian firearms without looking at government as a whole's control over firearms.
One of the questions that I've been asking is the fact that many of the reputable companies have been found to have been responsible one way or the other, at least in issues around state capture. Talking about your big auditing firms, your big banks, national and international, and you know, just that whole space, that space of the reputable guys in suits, right? You might want to call it white collar crime. To what extent does the enablement of crime by, for example, the auditing companies that we know of as reputable companies, the banks, to what extent do they feed into this whole network, this ever-growing, more intense, growing network of criminality in South Africa?
Look, I think that the Zondo Commission has really shone quite a significant spotlight on how certain private sector players are getting involved in it. And I think when it comes to the banking system, we have a really good banking system in terms of some of our requirements. I think the extent to which corruption happens in the state, it also happens in the private sector as well. And I think we need to look beyond just those kinds of private sector, but You see it in some of the private security sector, with in some areas where there's corruption in the private security sector. I think we need to look at the private sector as well. And that's why we're saying that it can't just be a government response. It's got to be a countrywide response, and it's got to involve civil society, and it's got to involve the private sector as well, because they are also players in this.
Stock solutions. What needs to happen?
Okay, so I think that we are saying that there are a couple of things that we would want to engage with, and I mean, we don't have. Let us be clear. This is our view of some of the steps that need to be taken, and we're not saying that we know it all, and we want to engage in debates and discussions with people around how to take it forward. But some of the things that we have pointed to is, I think that we need a holistic regulatory and enforcement drivers, where we recognise the markets and the interconnectivity between the different markets. You know, I think we need a better set of data. You know, we currently have crime stats, which are quite useful, let's be clear. But when it comes to organised crime, I mean, we've seen the homicide rate escalate dramatically. But we can't break that down and say, how much of that homicide rate can we attribute to illicit markets and to organized crime? And one of the things that we need to start looking at is new and better data around organized crime. And we need to look at better cross-department analytical capacity. One of the things that we are suggesting is that we need to look at an organized crime strategy, which is a countrywide strategy, which is public, which is owned by the country, which we begin to understand. Mm. And in terms of looking at the way forward, we're saying that there is definitely an enforcement aspect to this. And that is, we need to look at how we are responding from an enforcement perspective, and that would involve your criminal justice system and how are we going to address some of the problems in the criminal justice system, where organized crime has become as embedded as it has in the criminal justice system. We also need to look at prevention measures. How do we, for example, stop young people who are unemployed, etc., from becoming the foot soldiers of organized criminal actors? And one of the issues which we think is something that we need to debate and discuss, and it has to be done, let me be clear, it has to be done very carefully, and it has to be done in a very strategic way, is you can't just arrest yourself out of the situation. And how do we then start to say, how do we integrate people into the formal economy in a way which actually cuts down the ability to operate in a mafia style?
Zama included?
One classic example would be in the taxi industry. Another would be to look at what is happening. And I say to you, this is something which requires debate and discussion and needs to be handled strategically. What we don't want to see is where you just have a knee-jerk integration response, and what you do is you embed mafia-style operations into the formal economy, yeah, and into the formal way of doing things. So it needs to be done in a manner which actually isn't going to do that. But it is something that we need to discuss. And then I think what we really, really need in this country is a lot more data, which is available and which is open to people to understand, on how are these organized crime markets operating, how are they intersecting, and what is the criminal ecosystem operating around these markets, so that we can develop better strategies to begin to deal with them.
Are the people what matter listening?
Sorry, are they?
The people that matter. The people in authority, the people in positions of power, both in the private and the public sector. Are they listening?
We had quite extensive consultations prior to the release of this assessment, and that involved people in both the private sector and the government sector and civil society groupings. And I think that we were quite, I mean, I think we actually didn't expect to necessarily get the responses that we got. And I think the responses across the board have been, yes, we think this is something positive. We think we need to start engaging and discussing around these areas. And we have actually been actually quite encouraged by some of the responses that, that we have received to this. So I think that there's acknowledgement that that this is a problem and that we need to understand these issues better. And I think the issue is now, how do we take that forward?
Where do we find the report if we want to read it more?
So you can go onto the Global Initiative website. So if you actually just, I don't have the exact website in front of me now, but if you just Google Global Initiatives Against Transnational Organized Crime, Strategic Organized Crime Risk Assessment South Africa, it'll throw up our email address and the report itself, and you can download it on the web.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, Jenny. Much appreciated.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Jenny Irish Koboshiani, researcher at the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime.